plant a tree, create a neighborhood, reduce pollution, fight crime. Sounds like the work of a superwoman, and that's who I'm interviewing today. Next on Through the Eyes of Women, join me, Corinne Fregoni, in a conversation with Kemba Shakur, the founder and director of Urban Relief, a nonprofit responsible for the planting of an estimated 20,000 trees in low-income East Bay communities and offering job opportunities for at-risk youth and unemployed adults. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women, a program featuring the lives and perspectives of women, local, national, and international. Kemba Shakur has been called a modern-day John Muir, or simply, Tree Lady. When Kemba moved to Oakland, California in 1990, there was not one tree on her block, so she began to plant them herself. Now her organization, Urban Relief, has planted over 20,000 trees throughout Oakland and Richmond, working to improve the quality of life in ecologically disadvantaged neighborhoods and provide employment for at-risk youth. 20 years later, her organization has broken up the concrete of blighted neighborhoods, planted trees, and enhanced community involvement and employment. Kemba and her organization, Urban Relief, have won many awards for transforming the Oakland landscape, one tree at a time. And Urban Relief has become one of the preeminent urban forestry groups in the nation. What makes this interview very special for me is that I've known Kemba since she was 9 years old living in San Francisco. It's been a few decades, and I won't say how many, but it is such an honor and privilege to have this opportunity to talk with this very committed, passionate woman who is making such a positive difference in her neighborhood, her city, and California. Kemba, I'm so proud of you, and I welcome you to our show.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's an honor to be on your show, and I'm just elated to be interviewed by you.
Let's start with this question. When you first started planting trees on your block in Oakland, did community members think you were crazy?
No. Actually, my family thought I was crazy, but with the community, the need was so great, you could see it. I mean, imagine standing on a block, and when you turn all four corners, all you see is concrete with no trees, treeless sidewalks, freeways at a distance, and poverty. So it was really easy to see the conditions and figure out that something needed to be done. My focus was actually not just trees, but when I first moved to Oakland in 1994, it was high unemployment, you know, high murder rates, high school dropout rates. And then as you drive through the community, you would see 10 people under one tree. So I was like, oh, God, this is what I have to do. Because, you know, you had a lot of greening programs, but not the tree part of it. So I had to, whenever I told people I wanted to bring more greenery, they didn't necessarily think trees, but trees were just special to me.
Well, what did you do before you started planting trees?
Well, I was a correctional officer at Soledad Prison and left there after about 3 years.
I think you said when I read some information about you that Soledad actually had more trees than your neighborhood.
Well, actually, what I said was when I first moved to West Oakland, I made a comment that the grounds at Soledad Prison were more greener than the streets of West Oakland. And it's true. I mean, it's definitely an issue.
Well, when and where did you learn to love trees?
I believe that that's where you come in. As a child, I remember my mother. You know, my mother has six kids. I'm the second oldest. And, you know, we moved around a lot, but she always took the time to take us to the park or to take us to the beach or on long rides, you know, down Highway 1 or up to Stinson Beach. And then I, you know, particularly remember when she was going through a divorce and she was just so stressed out and she went to Yosemite with you. And when she came back, she looked stronger. her legs were like defined, and she came in with a big old backpack with a pot hanging off it, and she had this strength about her. And she said, I know what to do. I have a plan. And I kind of associated that with getting out into the wilderness and being able to free your mind of all the city stuff. And it just seemed like a solution to get into greenery. And she talked about the trees of Yosemite and how beautiful it was. She talked about Tuolumne Meadows that I visited and saw beautiful redwood trees. And I just think that was her escape. And it being her escape was our escape, or my escape.
Do you think you've passed on that spirit and love to your own children?
Oh, I'm sure of it. I'm 100% sure of it. You can't go anywhere in the city of Oakland and not see our trees. Two of my sons are certified arborists, and yeah, they love it. They love tree planting.
But you said they were embarrassed when you first started.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Tell us about those first few days.
Well, when we first started, we didn't have a truck, you know, so I would rent trucks, borrow trucks, but I finally got a big old red truck. And then the day that I bought the truck, I ran into the tow truck man because the brakes were bad on the truck. So it had this huge grin on it. But I love the truck. But we drove the truck through the community. And back then they were like, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old. And when they saw their friends, they would duck down. But, you know, that truck planted about 4,000 or 5,000 trees. So that truck was really a winner. But later, you know, as the kids got older, they began to hire their friends and bring their friends on, and they had jobs. They were, you know, making money at 14 and 15 years old. So they began to grow into the value of trees.
What's the youngest child and the oldest person who has worked for Urban Relief?
Well, my youngest son is Kwame, and they call him the nature boy. He loves animals. He loves getting, he loves water. He loves forestry. So he's really into it. And then my oldest son, Ahmad, he, to me, is a person that needs the environment, needs to get away from the city. You know, in a sense, I'm sure we all do. But I believe that trees has given my family another way of looking at the environment, you know, a way to care for the environment and to respect it, because they put a lot of hard work and effort into it.
And how many other people are employed by Urban Relief?
Well, right now there's 10 of us. 6 are planting trees, the rest are administration, and we're planting about 1,200 trees a year.
And how many people volunteer?
Oh, wow. Well, I would say maybe a couple thousand a year. We just had a tree planting for MLK Day Monday at Oakland Tech, and there was like 400 or 500 people there. Almost 500 people there.
And how do you describe the spirit of all the people working to plant trees?
You know, it's amazing to me. It's amazing that trees bring so many people together. I mean, religious groups, youth groups, senior citizens, environmentalists, politicians, everybody. And, you know, so not just all those different type of people, but even, you know, different ages and stuff. So I think it's the spirit of giving back to community, showing people that you care, you know, showing people that you're not only willing to talk about it, but be about it. And we have, you know, not groups and sponsors and businesses, I think, that are all interested in the same thing, especially right now with issues of global warming, an issue, you know, at the forefront of the environment. It's actually gaining speed.
Well, we'll get back to that. What I want to know is if you can tell us some stories about some of the individual kids who've worked for you, what their backgrounds are, and how this has impacted them in their own lives.
Well, I have a lot of kids, but one that is really special is a young lady named Rakia Harris. Rakia, parents are both deceased at 4 and 5. She was raised by an aunt. Her and her siblings, she had 5 siblings. Her aunt had like 6. So she was raised by an aunt with a house full of kids. And one day I was out planting trees, next to a fuel station with kids, and she was out pumping gas for money. She was like 11, 12 years old. She was 12 years old. And she came up to me, little bitty skinny thing, and she said, "Can I have a job?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure." Thinking that, you know, when she got older, she would call me. But every weekend, Rakia would call me, "Can I have a job? Can I have a job? When can I get a job?" So I'm like, "Well, you're too young, but I can bring you in as a youth stipend." So Rakia started working for me at 12 years old, or working for Urban Relief at 12 years old, and she worked really hard. She left at 18 to go study at Clark University, graduated, and now she's back on a whole nother level, giving back to the organization. She's one of my proudest accomplishments.
I would imagine that's one of the most gratifying aspects of your work. What keeps you going?
Well, what keeps me going is this is the time. You know, 20 years ago, when you talked about trees, and people weren't as interested. But now that, you know, like I said, global warming is an issue, pollution is an issue, issues of air quality, you know, are at the forefront of the environment, there's a renewed interest in trees, and it's on a whole nother level. So, you know, I can't stop now. It actually feels like the beginning. It feels like trees are now at a whole nother level of advocacy and funding and people being interested in it.
Has it been difficult for you to get funding?
At times it has, yes. It's, you know, being grant-based, it's not easy. You know, trying to make payroll for 10 people every 2 weeks is not easy. But, you know, we've been allowed to hang in there. CAL FIRE has been very supportive of our efforts, and we've been lucky to be funded by them every year.
Tell me what CAL FIRE is.
Well, CAL FIRE is a state agency, California State Urban Forestry. But CAL FIRE is a state agency that focuses on trees.
And is the city of Oakland supportive of your work?
The city of Oakland under Jerry Brown was awesome. I came in at the same time that Jerry Brown came in, and he was very supportive of trees. He took our organization, I believe, to another level when he began to cut concrete for us and support our program. So Jerry Brown, I think, it was really one of the main mayors in Oakland that understood the benefits of trees. Back in 71, when he was a mayor, he supported a tree group. So with him, under Jerry Brown, it was very positive. But some of the other mayors or city councils seemed to not necessarily support our program, but to make it a area of their own to promote. And I just kind of thought that was kind of messed up, because you're supposed to be working for the people. And when you, you know, not support it, a local agency in favor of pushing your own agenda, I kind of think that's wrong.
I'm sure you're not the only one who's had to deal with that.
No.
Are there many people of color doing what you're doing in other cities or even in the Bay Area?
Well, I know in L.A. there's some Latino groups. I don't know of any other black leaders of urban forestry in California, or actually anywhere, for that matter, in the nation.
Is Urban Relief one of the few organizations that actually focuses on improving the ecology of poorer neighborhoods?
Well, you know, right now, for the most part, we were. Our whole focus was planting trees in communities with little greenery. But now, through the efforts of the environmental justice community, greening in certain communities, certain disadvantaged communities, are a priority. Through the environmental justice community, Governor Brown, and the environmentalists, we now are, a major portion of funding is being focused in communities deemed disadvantaged on the Cal EnviroScreen map. So these communities are now being supported like they've never been before.
How do you define environmental justice?
I actually met Anthony Ballard, who wrote the Principles of Environmental Justice, and I think he's just awesome. But I defined it as, you know, people coming together to deal with the injustices and inequities of environmental issues. And many of those issues could be you know, companies polluting areas, people living in high polluted areas, people living next to refineries, those things, people fighting against injustices in their community. For example, one inequity within environmental justice is here in the city of Oakland, you have two freeways. You have 580 that goes into the hills, and then you have 880 that goes through the flatlands. 580 has a congressional amendment to not have trucks go through the hills, but 880, there's a huge amount of trucks and pollution and, you know, poor air quality going through the flatlands where mainly poor people live.
And how does that affect the health?
Oh, wow. Well, you know, the city of Oakland, I believe the national average was like 10 times more children are more hospitalized with asthma in the nation than other areas. So our air quality is really bad. We're working on a project at Brookfield Elementary, which is right next to the 880 freeway that has a wall between it. But at that school, like 70% of the children have asthma. They have overhead wires. They have no trees. They had no trees. We just actually planted 100 trees. But prior to us coming in and planting those trees, there was not a blade of grass on the schoolyard. And just a few weeks ago, they determined that there were lead in the pipes. So these children are growing up with environmental issues that has to be dealt with, but that has not been dealt with for a long time.
And so you've planted trees around there. Is there anything happening with the 880 freeway?
You know, I'm not sure. There's been a real issue with the port and goods movement around idling trucks at the Port of Oakland. And, you know, they've instituted different mechanisms for the trucks and different rules in terms of the trucks idling in the community. But overall, you know, my solution is planting trees.
And are you going to be able to?
Well, yes, we've been working with a lot of local groups here in the city of Oakland to plant trees. We've received funding from CAL FIRE to plant 1,200 trees. Natural Resources is also funding us to plant trees next year.
Along the freeway?
Yes. It's an exercise in patience, but, you know, the trees that we plant today will impact the young people 20 years from now.
And with the federal government now dismantling a lot of environmental protections, is that affecting your organization?
Well, no, not at this time. You know, Jerry Brown is a strong environmental governor. He really speaks for the environment and supports the environmental issues. So I think we just got to keep voting for people like him.
This is a good time to take a break. You're tuned in to Through the Eyes of Women. I'm Corinne Fragoni, and you're listening to Kemba Shakur, who founded and directs Urban Relief, a program that plants trees in many of the poor neighborhoods in the East Bay, and she's done some phenomenal work. Let's get back to what you are doing. You are an urban forester. Tell me what urban forestry is. We live in an area that's beautiful, that has a lot of trees, and Humboldt State University has a very strong forestry department. But what specifically is urban forestry?
Well, urban forestry is forestry in cities. And, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, in cities are the most populated. So a lot of times people think about, when they think about trees, they think of rural areas and they think about, you know, huge forests. They don't generally think about city trees. So urban forestry in itself, it has other issues and obstacles than, say, rural trees because of the fact that there's more people that are around them and that impact them.
So what are some of these challenges?
Well, for urban tree, cars, vandalism, just the fact that there's so many people around, their life expectancy is a lot less than, say, a rural tree.
And what are some of your favorite trees that you plant?
Oh, you know, they change every few years. But right now, one of my favorite is the orange glory maple because it's out of all the maples, it loses its leaves at the end, like closer to September, October. But before it loses its leaves, it goes through all of these different colors, the reds and yellows and oranges. And it's just a beautiful tree. I'm actually looking at one right now.
When you plant a tree, how do you maintain it?
Well, that's where the crew comes in. Daily, they go out and they plant trees, they maintain trees, meaning they restake, retie, water. We have a few hundred trees that have to be watered weekly, so we have a maintenance crew.
All through the interview, you've been talking about the wonderful qualities of trees. Do you think that urban trees can fight crime?
Yes, I do.
How?
Well, one of the challenges that we first had when we moved here, where we noticed that in the high crime areas, there were no trees, or in the poorer areas, there were no trees. And as we began to ask the older people, they told us that the police would encourage them not to have trees or to cut them down. And I was just shocked at this. But, you know, I feel, and studies have been done, that, you know, when you go out and you see greenery and birds, and it creates a positive feeling, you know, instead of seeing concrete and overhead wires and gates, and, you know, it's just a whole different feeling. So I think that it, you know, involving the community to become stewards of their community gives them a sense of responsibility and being involved.
Do you think that your own block has changed as a result of your planting trees?
My block definitely has changed. I live on a block where Bobby Seale, the chairman of the Black Panther Party, lived. So we've always had tour buses and tours of the block ever since I've been here, of people going to see Bobby's house and Old Merritt College and some of the places where they held their offices. But there wasn't a tree on the block when I moved here in 94. And now when you look at the block, it's just absolutely beautiful. Every house has a tree. We now see birds, squirrels, wildlife. It's been transformed. It brings up property value. So, you know, I don't know if that's another issue. It's like people tell me the places where we've planted the most trees, the property value has gone up.
In other words, gentrification.
Yeah.
Well, that's certainly a flip side of all the wonderful things that planting trees can do.
Well, in a sense, I think that, you know, things change, people move. My focus is not necessarily new people moving in. My issue is more so the treatment. You know, it's I've seen the way how gentrification has affected the people who lived in this community for years. The children, the young men and women, or young people, particularly young men, become suspects in their own communities, you know, are looked upon as if they are criminals. You know, and the attitudes of the new people don't necessarily reflect who we are as a community.
In other words, worse or better?
Some things are better and some things are worse.
Tell me more.
Well, the neighborhood changed in a lot of ways, both positive and negative. We have a lot more services. We have more beautiful landscape residences, houses. So you really see the economics of the people playing itself out in how the community looks. But on the other side, you know, my sons, I have four sons of color and in the community. And with the arrival of a lot of the newer people, it pushed out a lot of the young people. And the newer folks seem to have a negative attitude towards young people of color. But, you know, as I look through history, I know that, you know, people change, people move, different groups come and go, and that's just the way of the world, I guess.
What do your sons think?
Well, my son, Akeem, the other day talked about how it does feel funny walking down the street and people looking at you like you're a suspect. And he's had some bad experiences. As soon as he came home from college, the police, he was on the corner coming home, and the police grabbed him, threw him against the fence, and told him he fit the description of a suspect. And he said, "I just got home from college today. Look at my back pocket, my school ID in it." So he looked in his back. The police pulled out back pocket. His ID out of his back pocket, looked at it, gave it back to him, and then just took off. And I have many stories like that. I mean, a lot of times the UC Berkeley students come and work with us, and if one of my sons, Jamal, Akeem, or Kwame, is driving, several times the police have stopped them saying that they fit the description, but the students are like, "We're from Berkeley," and, you know, so it gives them a chance to see what young black men go through.
And you feel that's worse now that more trees have been planted and the neighborhood looks so much better.
No, I think it's better. It's always good to plant trees.
All right. Thank you for clarifying.
In any season, for any reason, there's always a reason to plant trees. You know, Alice Walker did a poem about planting trees in any situation and every situation.
Well, thank you for clarifying that. I want to, in our last few minutes of the interview, I want to talk a little about your mother. You know, she was a very close friend of mine and a very special person, and she certainly taught me a lot. If you don't mind, can you tell us more about her and how she impacted your life?
You know, it's been almost 20 years, and I still am affected by her death. I feel like, sometimes I feel like I could have done more or I should have been there, but my mother was a master's degree practitioner. She loved people, she loved nursing, and she loved delivering babies. So she moved to the poorest part of the South, Tuscaloosa, Alabama, worked in a clinic, was in a city called Galt, Alabama. And one night the sheriff came and told her that she owed the county $10, and they arrested her, and she died in jail, pleading for her life.
It still haunts me as well.
Yeah.
Now, if you could give advice to a young 21-year-old Kemba, what would you tell her?
Oh, wow, 21-year-old Kemba. Well, you know, I would tell that young lady to embrace your dreams, embrace your goals. You know, at 21, I felt a lot of responsibility. I felt so much responsibility to the family, to people, you know, outside of me. But I would say now at 21, run with self. Be selfish. You know, just focus on you and your goals and your aspirations, and you'll get it. You'll get it. It'll come.
And if you could rub a lamp and a magical genie appeared, what would you ask for?
Well, I'm always accused of trying to save the world. It's really depressing driving through the streets of Oakland and seeing so many homeless people living next to freeways, living in the parks. You know, if I had a lamp, I think the first thing I'd do is eradicate poverty. Even though Jesus Christ couldn't eradicate poverty, I would want to do more about the issues of poverty.
I'm going to end with this question, Kemba. I know that you like to write, and I would love it if you read one of your poems before we end this program, and give us the title as well.
Sure. I'll share A Tree Grows in Oakland. There's a tree that grows in Oakland. It's not just any tree. It's a poor man's tree. It's a tree that grows out of cracks in the sidewalk or out of abandoned lots or amongst discarded tires. And if the trunk is cut off, it'll just come back. To behold such a tree is a magnificent sight. Trees that survive no matter what.
Thank you so much. And your work will survive. I know that.
Oh, thank you.
You've been listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I'm your host, Corinne Fragoni. My guest today was Kemba Shakur, director and founder of an organization called Urban Relief. To learn more about Urban Relief, go to urbanrelief.org, and that's spelled urbanrelief.org. Through the Eyes of Women is a collaborative effort produced for KHSU located at Humboldt State University. Thanks to today's engineer and editor, Katie Whiteside. You can listen to this show again at khsu.org or visit our blog at khsuwomen.com, where you can post listener comments. Join us again next Monday at 1:30 right here on KHSU.